2016, let me be as clear as I can be. In politics and in life, ignorance is not a virtue. It's not challenging political correctness. That's just not knowing what you're talking about.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Monday, another business day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. I'm Steve Grzanich, 516. It's the May 16th. It's 5:09. And we have lots to talk about today. Our Allstate CEO spotlight, of course, is today. We'll be talking with the CEO of GMM Nonstick Products. Also coming up a little later on, we'll hear some local commencement addresses that were inspiring, to say the least. But first, your overnight global intel from around the world. The market desk, here are the numbers right now. U.S. stock futures struggling to gain traction this morning after Chinese economic indicators pointed to more weakness, overshadowing a renewed push for oil prices. The Dow Jones Industrial Futures are up just about 11 points this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are also up just a bit. Also this morning, oil prices rose after Goldman Sachs said that the oversupplied market has likely switched to a deficit and lifted its price forecast for the year. It's also causing crude oil gains. It's not providing much of an inspiration, though, for those stock futures, as I mentioned. European stocks pulled lower this morning. Gloom over the markets as Chinese data highlighted global concerns, growth concerns, but a climb in oil prices fueled gains for energy shares. We're learning a little bit more about what went on behind closed doors at the Tribune shareholders meeting. Oaktree Capital Management apparently urged the newspaper publisher Tribune Publishing to negotiate a merger with Gannett after it declined a purchase offer by Gannett. This is what Barron's is reporting, citing 13D filings from May 5th through the 11th. Oaktree holds a 15% stake in Tribune shares, making it the third biggest shareholders. Also this morning, Amazon is announcing it's set to launch a new private label in coming weeks. Amazon's going to launch a new private label of several brands. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. The new brands with names like Happy Belly, Wickedly Prime, and Mama Bear will include nuts, spices, tea, coffee, baby food, and vitamins. Well, there is a Chicago CEO who is making the rounds nationally. He's been garnering a lot of national attention for his views about politics, namely the presidential campaign of Trump versus Clinton. Ravin Gandhi made an appearance just last week on CNBC.
Well, I would say that Mr. Trump, in my view, has disqualified himself from being the president for two key issues. Number one, on trade. Mr. Trump is talking about a xenophobic trade policy, which would potentially cause the prices of everything at Walmart to go up by 60 to 100% overnight. And imagine what that would do to the consumer. We might actually have a recession in this country that made 2008 look like kid stuff.
GMN Nonstick Coatings is a global supplier of nonstick coatings to the cookware, bakeware, and electrical appliances industries. Gandhi oversees 240 people at GMN Nonstick Coatings, whose products are sold and used on almost every continent on the planet. He is our Allstate CEO spotlight this morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell, Ravin. Let's start with this. I know it's kind of like a question, but what makes you tick?
I really think, and this will sound like the biggest cliche trope, but, carpe diem, life is short. And I really feel like I have... I'm almost 43. So I kind of feel like I've, had a great 20s and 30s, and I've got two little kids now, and I'm highly aware that every day is precious. And it sounds, just saying it sounds ludicrously corny, but it's true. Like, I really feel like, you've got to get out of bed and do something, and don't just waste time and wake up one day and have regret.
Is that something that you bring to work and share with employees? Do they pick that up from you?
I hope so. It's certainly, I think I'm known as a pretty high energy guy, certainly in my industry. We have about 250 employees at my business, and so I know almost everybody pretty well. And I have a co-founder, and so he and I started this business 8 years ago. And what we both like to say is, it's so great when you can kind of be your authentic self at work, especially when you're the CEO, because it's very well known that culture permeates down. So I have a great time with my people. I mean, that's kind of one of the biggest motivators I have, is I love developing people. I love working with my people. You know, we travel a lot. We're a very global business. You know, I deal with my clients a lot. So that's all kind of wrapped up in this attitude that hopefully is imbued somewhere.
You got a BA from the University of Illinois. You have an MBA from Kellogg. You're very well educated. How has being a dad educated you more or less for your job?
It's educational. It's very humbling. And I think there's, I mean, God, I could talk forever about what I've learned from my kids, even though they're only 3 and 5. But from a primacy perspective, I would say, number one, you can't control everything. You see these kids and you realize that, man, they've got their own agenda. They came out with personalities. They're little humans. They're citizens. And they've got their agenda. And when you look at professional situations, a lot of times people kind of beat up themselves if they didn't see something coming around the corner. And I feel like one of the things that I could take as a learning from the kids is there are certain things that are simply out of your control from a business perspective. And that's okay. So the other thing is motivation. You know, now my oldest is 5. And you can learn so much about just motivating people by watching kids. You know, why is that kid doing what he's doing? He's 5. He is all id. You know, he's picking up what he wants to pick up. He's watching what he wants to watch. He has absolutely no agenda. It's made me much more humble and hopefully much more understanding.
There are a lot of young people who are studying, graduating now, probably from the same school that you did, same schools that you did, wondering, is the stuff that I have learned helping me, going to help me? What would you say to them?
What I think that the American and probably the global education system can do a little bit of a better job is teaching kids, particularly maybe in high school, why are you learning what you're learning? You know, I found myself, I was always a voracious reader, and I actually didn't do too well in high school. I actually had much worse grades than people today believe. And one of the reasons why was I had all of these outside interests in school. I was reading books of things I was interested in. And a lot of times I wasn't able to connect that to what the test I was taking in school. Once I got to college and I got into my 20s, I read much, much, much more. And I was so it almost made me have a desire to go back to my high school and grab kids in the hallway and say, you know, that humanities class or that current events class or even that physics class, here is actually how it might connect to something you might do someday. Besides the academic part of learning in school, I think that you learn so much from a social capital perspective. You know, I was in a fraternity and you learn so much with dealing with guys and living in dorms and living away from your parents and being independent and cutting those cords. I think that all of that stuff percolates back up as you get into the professional world. And the number one thing that I tell younger people who are in school is just because you get straight A's, I mean, that's awesome, okay, and we should all hope everyone gets straight A's, but just because you do doesn't really mean that you're going to be successful, because in the real world, there are no grades. And, you know, you have to deal with people and you have to deal with conflict. And just because you got 100% yesterday, no one cares about that. And it's what are you going to do tomorrow? So there's a lot of lessons.
Ravin Gandhi is CEO of Chicago-based GMM Nonstick Coatings. He's in our CEO spotlight this morning.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. A late slump Friday pulled U.S. stocks to their third straight weekly loss. Companies that make clothing, food, and household goods dropped on more bad news from retailers. Energy companies fell with the price of oil. Verizon and striking labor officials have decided to return to the bargaining table tomorrow after meeting with Labor Secretary Tom Perez yesterday. Union members from Massachusetts to Virginia have criticized Verizon for outsourcing jobs. The company says it's trying to manage costs. Americans have been eating out more, and they're buying more cars. But the main beneficiaries of spending over the last year have been Amazon, eBay, and other virtual retailers. Online spending rose 11% from a year ago, while earnings sank at brick-and-mortar stores. And General Motors is telling dealers not to sell about 60,000 SUVs because the gas mileage listed on the window stickers was inadvertently overstated. It's 1 or 2 miles per gallon too high. The error affects all 2016 Chevy Traverse, GMC Arcadia, and Buick Enclave models. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 522. Welcome back in the Allstate CEO Spotlight this morning. Ravin Gandhi, the founder and CEO of Chicago-based GMM Nonstick Coatings. Ravin, I'm curious, how's your company doing? What challenges do you face? And is it tough being CEO?
Every day, 40 million people in America use my product when they cook. Our clients are most of the household names that you find in America. People like Calphalon and Cuisinart and KitchenAid and Oster and Farberware and Food Network. And it goes on and on.
If you're making a breakfast panini right now, you're probably using the nonstick coating.
For sure, yeah. We if you walk through a Target or a Bed Bath & Beyond or a Walmart, the cookware industry is a $9 billion industry. So all of my clients are multi-billion dollar American corporations. In terms of how we're doing, I think we're doing great. We've been growing. I started the company 8 years ago with a partner, and we've not ever had a year where we've grown less than 25%. We've never had a down year. We've never laid off anybody. We've only hired people every year. That I'm so proud of that, because we started the company with just me and another guy, right? We had nobody. We had nothing when we started. And now when I walk through our offices or I see my product somewhere, or someone forwards me an email chain that I'm not on, and it's three of my people going back and forth with the client, and I just feel so good about the fact that we've built what I think is a pretty good culture in the organization, a culture of not micromanaging, a culture of leadership, and hopefully, you know, people are happy working there.
The Illinois business climate, Chicago's business climate, sometimes doesn't get a good rap. What are the solutions to this? I mean, do you see this? Does your company feel this?
It just crushes my soul to see what's going on in Illinois. It's so embarrassing. I mean, I'm born and raised in this state. I've lived here pretty much my whole life. I love Chicago. I've lived downtown for the last, 25 years. It blows my mind that Illinois can't get its act together. And I'm not sure what the answer is. When I met Rauner while he was running, I said, I think you're going to win, but I think you might potentially rue the day you ever threw your hat in the ring, because it is a tough situation here. And that's not to say that I think that he's the protagonist or the antagonist. I just think that you've got decades of systemic incentives that are potentially misaligned in this state. And I wish I was smart enough to have an answer. Illinois is tough. I mean, I'm sure if you ask the mayor, he would tell you it's tough. I'm sure the governor would tell you it's tough. I would say, don't lose sight of the bigger picture, leaders of Illinois, and realize Cranes is, I think, pretty good about keeping the readers posted week by week of how nightmarish the situation is. And a lot of the writers at Cranes, they always say, hey, Rahm, hey, Rauner, hey, Madigan, blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of sense in a lot of these people's opinions, and they tend to be on different sides of the aisle politically. So I think I'm probably most on the line of locking these guys together in a room and saying, you got 12 hours to figure it out or you're both out. And of course, that's not possible constitutionally, but in a utopian world where I was the despot, I think that's what we would do.
That's the way a CEO would probably deal with it if these were your employees.
Oh, it wouldn't take that long for that to happen, I promise you.
Why are there not more women CEOs?
Well, I think women have had it hard. I mean, again, read history, read books, man. You'll learn so much about the world. Women were subjugated and they just got the vote 100 years ago, right? And it blows my mind. And I have a similar view if you talk about the racial history of America. We have a troubled history as a nation. And in as much as I just said we're the greatest country probably in history, one of the greatest things about this country is that we have acknowledged the sins of our past and we take steps to rectify them. And I think when I see policies for gender equality, when I see things like affirmative action, there's always hair on these policies, right? And you always want a meritocracy, to have the best person survive. But on the other hand, you have to acknowledge the fact that there are structural and systemic things that have kept certain groups of people around the world from rising up. I think that whether or not Secretary Clinton wins in November, it seems clear she's going to be the standard bearer for the Democratic Party. That right there is a big box checked. Never had a female nominee. If she in fact wins, that's another big box checked for America. I do a lot of global business. I'm always in Asia. I'm always in Europe and South America. So I get into this discussion a lot with a lot of business leaders in other countries. And what's unbelievable is how much they know about our politics. I mean, the whole world is watching. Absolutely. And I couldn't believe it. I was in Japan a couple of weeks ago. These guys knew more about Donald Trump's positions than I did because they're that concerned about it. So I think back to your question about women, I'm all for it. I think that, we have a lot of women leaders in my business. you're never going to get most enlightened people to say that a woman can't do exactly what a man can do, shouldn't get paid exactly what a man should be paid. And I think the market sets the price. Go out to the Valley, you see a lot of women CEOs.
Let's do some rapid fire questions here. What's on your iPod? What are you listening to? What kind of music do you like?
You know, I'm definitely a classic rock guy when I was a kid, so it's a lot of Beatles and that kind of stuff. In terms of modern music, what I was listening to as I was walking over here was the Alabama Shakes, Don't Want to Fight No More. I love that song.
What about mentors? Do you have one that you can credit with helping you get to where you're at now?
There was a teacher that I had in high school who I actually haven't seen in decades, but I had him all 4 years of high school. His name was John Lewis, and I think he's won a lot of awards at Glenbrook South, which is where I went to school. And I was a really bad student, but he was a really good teacher. And having him for 4 years, which was a very unique situation, the way that school worked, he got to know me and always kind of put me in place because I was a pretty rebellious kid. And he was a physics teacher. And I really got into physics into my 20s. I read so much more about physics, even though I became a business guy. That percolation of interest of science had a huge impact on my worldview into the stuff that I've learned and the stuff that I'm into from, you know, like a reading perspective. So he was a big one. And then, of course, my family.
What's your company innovating right now? What's the next big thing that's going to come from your industry?
So, you know, making coatings for pots and pans, the problem that we solve is obviously food sticks when you cook. So, you know, believe it or not, we've got 30 R&D people 24/7. A lot of these guys are PhDs sitting in a lab trying to figure out a way to make food not stick when you make your eggs or your bacon. And it may sound like a small problem, but there's a lot of science there because every material that we have to use has to be approved by the FDA for food contact, right? Because there's so much health regulation, which, you know, thankfully. So for us, the innovation is usually on the continuum of making pans last longer, having spatulas not scratch the coating, having the ability to not stain the coating. A lot of times someone who cooks will throw their pan away because it looks really ugly because it's, you know, the bacon has made a big black mark on the pan, but in fact, the pan still works. So some of the innovation is just around things like that are as minor as color innovation. So we are very big on that. And so ceramic coatings is the biggest thing that we've rolled out in the last 2 years, which has kind of been a game changer in my industry because we were one of the pioneers of this technology. It's a very, very hard technology in terms of, you know, scrape resistance. It's really taking off. Most major American companies that make pots and pans are now using our ceramic coatings because they're really better than any coating that they've ever tested.
Ravin Gandhi is CEO of Chicago-based GMM Nonstick Coatings in our Allstate CEO Spotlight this morning. You can follow him on Twitter at RavinGandhi1, GMM Nonstick Coatings online at gmmdl.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 540. Welcome back to the program. Over the past year, internet and catalog retail sales have grown more than three times as fast as overall sales, up about 10%. During that same period, department store sales fell about 1.7%. While consumers boosted spending in April to the highest level in more than a year, they're increasingly going online to shop, and the gap between retailers and internet outlets is growing even larger. Eric Morath covers the economy for the Wall Street Journal, and he joins us this morning from Washington. Eric, good morning. Major brick and mortar retailers like Macy's, Kohl's, and the Gap, are they like the dinosaurs? Are their days numbered?
Well, I don't think their days are numbered in total, but I do think that it's going to be a lot more likely that maybe the one in your neighborhood won't be there, and more people will look to online to find, you know, their specialty fashions and the types of things that maybe they would have gone to the mall to 10 years ago.
What is it that's driving people online and away from these stores? The lower prices, convenience, both?
Yeah, I think it's both, but certainly price is a huge deal. You can go online, you can comparison shop easily between multiple different stores as opposed to driving around two or three different places. And this internet stores are great at inventory. They have what you want in stock now and can get it to you in a day or two. How many times have you gone to the mall and found, well, I like this shirt, but they don't have a medium? So then you end up having to go to a different store or end up ordering it anyways.
There's sort of an historic shift taking place here, isn't there? Amazon is now the second largest apparel seller in the U.S. behind Walmart. That category used to be dominated only by department stores. Are we seeing a shift that's going to be permanent, or what would you say?
No, absolutely, I think so. The sector of retail spending that the government, they call it non-store retail. That's basically at this point internet places like Amazon. That's now larger than department stores. So it's really a major segment of retail, and I don't think that we'll ever see it flip the other way. Really, if anything, I think you'll see those retailers, for example, Nordstrom's has already been really aggressive in terms of trying to be an online retailer just as much as they are brick-and-mortar retail. I think that's the more likely outcome, that the retail stores that thrive in the future are going to be really heavily online and then sort of have showcases in physical locations.
We've seen some of the brick-and-mortar retailers, specifically JCPenney, try to come back out of the gate and do something different and try to move forward. But JCPenney didn't really have an easy time of it. What was the problem there, and is there a lesson to be learned by the other retailers?
Well, there's been a lot of efforts by places like JCPenney's and others to recast their stores, refresh things, bring in different brands. They're sort of trying all the different parts of the playbook that have in the past worked for retailers, and it doesn't seem to be making a huge difference. You still see the migration towards online shopping, but it's not just there, especially for a place like JCPenney's. It's also these places like TJ Maxx and Marshall's, the really value places. Those are still drawing in customers with physical stores, not online. So part of the issue is consumers aren't seeing as much of a gap between Sears or Penny's or Kohl's, your middle of the retail market, and kind of what people would traditionally consider the bottom of the retail market. So they're not seeing the differentiation there, and then they're losing maybe perhaps a higher-end customer that might be coming in for, a decent pair of jeans or a sport coat. Well, they can get those things online, and so they're getting squeezed on both ends.
Is it going to get worse before it gets better for some of these brick-and-mortar retailers? Are we actually going to see Gap start closing stores?
Gap did announce this week that they're going to look at closing more stores. So, in terms of having as many outlets, I do think that they're definitely going to shrink because, some of these stores are money-losing operations. They're certainly very profitable stores. I'm not predicting that any of these major chains are going to be out of business in the near future, but I do think there'll be many fewer locations because I think retailers are realizing that this isn't Starbucks. You don't need to be down the block from every American to get sales. They know the Gap. They know Sears. If they can have a good online presence, they can, attract customers, even if the closest physical Gap might be, a half hour, hour's drive.
Eric Morath covers the economy for the Wall Street Journal. Eric, thanks for being with us this morning on the Opening Bell.
Sure, happy to do it.
All right, it's 5:45. You can find his stories, by the way, at WSJWallStreetJournal.com. And again, he covers the economy from Washington.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49. Welcome back to the program. On the market desk, the Dow futures pointing lower this morning, off about 11. The S&P NASDAQ futures also lower. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. As we look back at last Friday, the wheat market ended higher on short covering, but soybeans face pressure from expectations that U.S. farmers will plant more soybeans because of the price difference. Corn and wheat futures, though, hit their highest levels in more than a week on Friday. Meanwhile, in livestock trade, cash hogs in the Midwest traded steady to a dollar higher, supplies getting a little tight, pushing that market higher. And in the livestock futures trade at the Mercantile Exchange, the live cattle and feeder cattle futures really moved lower on Friday, but then trimmed the steep losses to close mixed. Some contracts rebounding on short covering and technical buying. Now, as we take a look at the other story that's making news, a second group of lawmakers investigating the EPA's policy over the review of glyphosate, questioning it why it withdrew a report that said the chemical in the world's most widely used weed killer was likely not carcinogenic. The House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, which has jurisdiction over environmental and scientific programs, sent a letter to the EPA earlier this month citing concerns about the apparent mishandling of the matter. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. The weekend brought several high-profile commencement addresses around the country and right here at home in Illinois and Chicago. President Obama addressed graduates at Rutgers University yesterday, took aim at what he calls a strain of anti-intellectualism in American politics.
It's always been young people like you that have brought about big change because you don't fear the future.
The address sounded a bit like a campaign speech at time, but Mr. Obama didn't mention Donald Trump by name. He did, however, take aim at Trump's Make America Great Again slogan and told graduates they are the reason America will not move backwards.
The rejection of facts, the rejection of reason and science, that is the path to decline.
Here in Chicago, Clever Safe founder Chris Gladwin delivered the commencement address at Illinois Institute of Technology. From the stage, he took a photo of the graduating class and then told them this.
Class of 2016, when you look at that graduation picture 10 years from now, in 50 years, and perhaps even in 100 years, you will see the faces of all of your classmates. You will see the faces of designers and engineers who have created new products used around the world. You will see the faces of lawyers who have advanced just causes. You will see the faces of scientists who have published industry-changing discoveries that have saved lives and nourished billions around the world. You will see the faces of architects who have created some of the world's greatest spaces. You will see the faces of people who have made the world safer, stood up for fairness, improved living conditions, learned about our place in the universe, and addressed climate changes. For those of you who will be able to look at that picture in 100 years, you will be the beneficiaries of one of the most profound technology developments in the coming decades, advancing human longevity. In class of 2016, you will be a part of creating many of the technologies enabling the advancement of human lifespans.
Meanwhile, Saturday at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, Jeff Huber delivered the commencement address. Huber is a former executive at Google who helped develop Google Maps and Gmail and also led technology development for Google Ads. He's now the chief executive of a company called Grail, a startup that hopes to develop a blood test to detect cancer early when it's treatable. His motivation is his wife, Laura, who died of colon cancer last year. Huber delivered a poignant message to the graduating class, but his marching orders to the graduates couldn't have been clearer.
Things don't happen for a reason, but you can find purpose and meaning in the things that do happen. Things don't happen for a reason, but how you respond can reveal your true character. Things don't happen for a reason, but they do often happen because nobody has yet found a better way. That's my message to all of you. Find a better way. College of Education graduates, 8 out of 10 low-income students can't read at grade level. You can find a better way to give everyone a fair chance. College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, from history to anthropology, you can find a better way to learn from our past and innovate for our future. And specifically, political science graduates, please, please find a better way to make our democracy work. Seriously, people, I don't want to have to move to Canada. This is my final thought for you. Even when you feel like you're stuck in the mud or cow manure and there isn't a path forward, even when you feel like you've failed and are humbled, even when you're at your darkest hour and you've lost a part of yourself, there is still hope. There's always hope. You can find purpose and meaning from those experiences. There is a better way. You have the passion, you have the tools, you have the skills. Use them for your own fulfillment and betterment of the world. Use them and find a better way.
Grail founder and CEO Jeff Huber delivering the commencement address at the University of Illinois, a windy graduation ceremony over the weekend in Urbana-Champaign. That's the opening bell for today. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Our show is produced by Mary Sandberg. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. Our production help from Bennett Wakenight.